to the Knitmore Girls podcast, a mother-daughter knitting production. This week, we will be omitting our regular segments in favor of a chat with Wonder. Welcome back, listeners. If you listened to our teaser a few days ago, you'll know that we will be chatting with Kat Borty today. How's it going, Kat?
Great. I'm enjoying being here in Moraga.
It's really nice this week. It's been nice and warm and sunny.
It's beautiful.
Weather is lovely. Knitting outside on the porch is beautiful. Very mellow.
It is. It's very zen and appropriate. We're actually up here in Lafayette taking Kat's sock classes. There's a toe-up one in the morning and a top-down one in the afternoon. And I heard about it last week from a girlfriend, and we signed right up.
And tomorrow, what's the class tomorrow?
Tomorrow on Mobius knitting.
Mobius.
Yeah. Totally excellent. So let's get right into the meat of it. Let's talk about the book since we're here for the class, New Architectures.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My most recent book is New Pathways for Sock Knitters, which I foolishly named book one, meaning that there have to be more, which I'm now working on. Basically, socks have been knit in one of two architectures for about the past 700 years, which is approximately as old as we think knitting is, although I suspect it may be thousands of years old.
Mm-hmm.
There's an Eastern method and a Western method, and only recently have people veered off in other directions.
Mm-hmm.
Now and again someone did, but mostly one incident and then it would drop away. And people have simply not questioned these two architectures very much. It's as if though someone made a rule 700 years ago saying, you can either have a yurt or a Tudor mansion. You can make them different colors, different sizes, but yurt or Tudor mansion. And no one said, but what about a Cape Cod or Frank Lloyd Wright?
Mm-hmm.
And I've discovered that the foot, which is a very odd shape to knit around,
mm-hmm.
is nevertheless welcomes completely liberated shaping within a certain area that lets you create new architectures at will. And so I identified eight. I could have identified 500, but the book would have been too long. So I identified eight and wrote a book about them and gave master patterns for each architecture so you can do anything you want at any gauge. But basically, I've scratched the surface of a very big field for knitters in which I make clear how to go about creating your own architectures or hybridizing them or doing anything you want.
And that's so useful because, like lots of other parts about people, feet are different. You know, my feet are different from yours. And one size doesn't usually fit all. So that's really interesting. And it looks so neat, which was what drew me. I'm not necessarily into changing the world and shifting architectures. I'm okay with the yurt or the Tudor mansion generally, but I watched how the architectures affected the aesthetic, which is more the angle I come from. Mom is into trying all sorts of different things, and I'm more like, oh, that's pretty, I'll do that.
When I'm reading architecture, I get kind of scared because it sounds like lots of math. How much math is there?
Very, very little. Basically, in the area where the architecture happens, you increase two every three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can do that. In fact, it's easier than increasing two every other round.
Yeah,
because you get two rounds where all you do is just knit, if you like. And then one round where you throw in two increases, and they can actually be put anywhere, which you notice there's no math involved in anywhere.
That's very true.
Yeah. There's a tiny bit of math involved in figuring out how to make the sock the right length, but it's only tricky because it's counterintuitive until you see why it works that way. But you get a foot precisely, a toe-up sock with a foot of precisely the right length, which has never been possible before. They've always been approximations. And then the same method for toe-up works top-down, and there's even less to think about.
It sounds spontaneous and dead-on at the same time.
It's organized
chaos.
That's
terrific. That's a lovely way to put it.
Organized chaos, yes.
That's lovely. Thank you.
So you used to teach math, actually.
I did. I taught what I called recreational math. I taught middle school humanities.
Okay.
And then I did some after-school things, Math Olympiad, which goes by various names in various forms around the country. But basically, it's the dessert of math. And I had kids who hated math, frothing at the mouth to get into this after-school program because, God, it was more fun than anything. Basically, I think math is is so much fun that Disneyland, if math did not have a bad reputation, Disneyland could have math Disneylands that would be the most popular thing on earth. And basically, all numbers are is a way to pick up shapes and move them around and say, oh, look, it got bigger or smaller when I did this. And knitters love that. They and just think they don't like math.
There's a lot of stigma behind it that has a lot of socio stigma to
gender.
It. Well, there's gender stuff too, but there is also all sorts of stuff. But anyway, without going into the political side of it, it seems like a smooth transition from being a recreational math teacher, which sounds like something you do in a back alley, you know, some recreational math, to teaching knitting and writing knitting books.
Very, very similar. And in fact, I also taught elementary school, and we had a math curriculum called Mathlands, which
I
loved.
Yeah,
where you had kids draw pictures, make graphs, move things around. In other words, get hands-on kinesthetic math, visual, spatial. And that was what taught me how to write knitting books, because I learned to express things in so many different ways. And so I was trained as an elementary school teacher to do what I'm doing now. And I've actually gone back to talk to kids in school and say, you know, you wonder what school is for. Well, here's what it did for me.
I found that the best math teachers I've had have been knitting instructors.
Good.
So I took a Knit to Fit class with Rick Mondragon when I was in high school algebra, actually. And it didn't make sense in class. Uh-huh. But granted, the teacher was not terrific. But I took it with Rick, and all of a sudden it made sense.
It was color and wonderful.
It was a purpose to the math.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
It wasn't out in space just being theoretical.
Yeah, as soon as there was an application, it made.
Exactly. See, math is normally divorced from what it represents in the way it's taught in schools.
Yeah.
And it's dry and horrible that way.
I think that's what's intimidating about it for a lot
of
people.
But knitting makes it delicious.
It really does, because you can do all these amazing things. And I'm actually, Mom and I signed up for one of your classes at Stitches, which we're so looking forward to.
Good.
But it was just one of those things where I was putting it together. I was like, wow, I've learned more about math in knitting classes than I have in my entire education, like where you can actually get into the meat of the math and pull it apart and make it fun.
I know.
So, yeah.
And it's not hard. You don't need trigonometry or something to do this. You just need to look at what you're doing and think about what you want to do and what numbers go with it.
Yeah. And again, knitting isn't forever. You can, if there's
you
a mistake,
can unravel.
It's not.
We don't chop our knitting into little pieces, usually.
Yeah. Usually. I was going to say, sticking is the only thing I can think of where you'd actually, it's kind of permanent.
Where you've done something permanent, yes.
So there's been some buzz on Ravelry
about
some sock summit things.
Yes. Well, there'll be much more buzz everywhere. We've just released the fact that it's going to happen. Blue Moon Socks That Rock are behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really love is that, like a few other yarn companies, Lorna's Laces and Mountain Colors in particular, who have worked together to create these duo kits, not competing but collaborating. Blue Moon wants to bring in all their competition from, you know, indie dyers to big companies, everyone together in Portland next summer, August 6th to 9th. And I predict there will be thousands of sock-obsessed knitters showing up from all over the planet. This is probably only going to happen once because it's too big to handle again. it'll be a historic thing. I'm calling it Wood Sock.
That's awesome.
But we're not going to have mud. And we don't need drugs because we've got yarn.
Exactly.
But
yarn fumes.
Yarn fumes. Yeah, we have yarn fumes. But at any rate, there will be every major sock teacher, author, everything will be there. And Anna Silborg, who I've always hoped I might get lucky enough to meet someday, will be there as a speaker one evening and as a teacher.
That's incredible.
I'm thrilled. Love and it. Nancy Bush, I believe, is coming. Pretty sure we've got Lucy Neatby. I'm just all these incredible people.
That's so amazing. And I think it really speaks to how different knitting as a business is, because they're bringing in people who, because it's not necessarily
It's a community.
It is.
It is a community. You know, people who are not territorial in knitting but share their ideas and what they have, the whole thing grows. Everyone gets more.
And all this collaborative.
Knitters know this.
Yeah. And all the collaboration stuff makes me just, it just gets me so excited because you look at Knitty, which made patterns accessible for really nice stuff to
everybody.
Knitty
is so important.
Yeah.
Knitty is a pillar of the knitting community.
And that's actually where I saw the first little bit of buzz about the Sock Summit was on Amy Singer's blog.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
I read about it on this Yarn Harlot blog.
Yeah, she was the first, she's the one who put it out first.
Okay.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
I get my announcements all backwards. But yeah, so it sounds really exciting. So you said you had Anna Zilborg and Lucy Nipi and all them coming.
We think we have Lucy. Lucy doesn't normally teach in the summer.
Okay.
But
so that's
I'm going to make her come.
So your ideal teaching lineup, not necessarily for Sock Summit, but like the Cat Bordy rock star.
The people who I tell, when I teach workshops, and I teach all over the continent, this continent, I tell them, if you ever get a chance to take a class from Lucy Nipi, you must. Judith McKenzie McEwen.
Yes.
Who is the ultimate. You have. You are so lucky. I may never get to take a class from her because I'm always teaching when she's teaching wherever we are.
My dream is
to someday take, I tell people if she were teaching how to clean the toilet for 7 days in a row, take that class.
Well, she's so thorough.
Well, she's such a saint, actually.
And
knows
energy.
So much. She knows everything. Annie Modisett is an incredible whirlwind and a genius. And she's an amazing teacher. I'm sure there are more, but those are some of my real favorites that I.
So, if there was anybody in the world you could take a class from,
living or dead.
Oh, good.
Who are your knitting heroes?
Well, Elizabeth Zimmerman and Barbara Walker. Barbara Walker, her book, Knitting from the Top, is one of the most brilliant bits of knitting engineering ever. There's not a mistake in it, which is impossible, but there isn't. And she was really the most formative influence in my early knitting years because she made me into a seamless knitting in the round person.
And on top of that, her stitch dictionaries are just...
I know. And there is not a single mistake in any of her stitch dictionaries. Meg Swanson told me that, and she said, actually, there is one in editing it. I put one in by mistake. Can you believe it? But Barbara Walker has a brain that works so well.
Yeah.
That she didn't make any. And she drew the charts by hand, you know?
Wow.
That was before we had 5 million knitting books. That was when we had 15 knitting books.
And it's so important, especially when if you don't have the resources to get yourself 18 million knitting books, that when people say, what are the 5 knitting books I should have? At least one of her
knitting
books
from
are
the
in
top,
there.
In my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's awesome.
The other thing is Lucy Nipi's knitting DVDs if you've seen them, there she has about a dozen or more now. And she's adding a few every year. They're completely professionally done. Lucy is a technician, a knitting technician who is just incredible. She invents things, she explains things, she's just brilliant. And the DVDs are worth their weight in gold. And you can watch them a million times. And her accent is very nice, too.
I found her book,
Cool Socks
Warm
Feet. Yeah, something like that.
It was amazing.
Yes.
And I found it very clear.
Mom has a habit of finding something, and then it's a book, it's a box of patterns, it's something. She'll start at one end and work her way all the way through.
Oh.
So she did.
Oh, you're wonderful.
She is, but she did that with the Lucy Nipi book.
Authors love you. There are not many people like you.
It just blows me away because she's been working through, the gal who did, Charlene Church did the little box of socks with somebody else.
And you went through everything?
There are two patterns that I'm not doing because I don't do yoga, and yoga socks where my toes hang out is just...
You don't need those.
My toes are always cold.
Then you don't need those.
Yeah, exactly.
But maybe your daughter does.
I can't wear socks when I do yoga. I slip.
Then you can skip those.
Exactly.
It's up to you.
But there are all these interesting techniques and patterns.
Fantastic.
And I found that I've been knitting way too many vanilla socks. And I got bored with that, and I find I need to challenge myself, and my life right now is in a place where it's pretty even. I don't need to have boring knitting. I can have challenging knitting because
Excellent.
everything else in life isn't challenging, if that makes
I hope
sense.
that will last for a while.
That could get boring. It's a balance thing
The balance.
because I'm heavily influenced by outside things. So the harder everything else gets, the easier my knitting gets. When things are pretty
Isn't that
even,
nice to use it as the balance? That's
it is.
lovely. I like that.
And when things get really horrible, I just spin.
You know, I think a lot of knitters do that, but I've never heard anyone put words to it. I like that very much.
I'm learning about balance. It's a process. But that's, I actually took a spinning class from Judith McKenzie last year.
Oh, good.
Oh, we took a 3-day comprehensive with her, and we actually stayed up in the
Oh, lucky
city.
you.
I was so excited.
Lucky you.
So it was such a
Did you do,
treat.
was it the Golden Gate Institute?
I'm not, I did, I have, bleh, I did that one right before they did Golden Gate. So it was the predecessor to Golden
Oh,
Gate.
good.
So it was hosted by Carolina Homespun,
Yes,
but
she's great.
it wasn't at their little center place. But we talked to Morgane about maybe taking
You should probably try
in
to do
January.
that.
Yeah. So I'm very excited because I've sat in on a few of her classes. I took a dyeing class with her like 10 years
10 years
ago.
ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So we learned loads and it was fabulous, but it was so good. And so besides knitting, you spin, I'm assuming, since
I
you
spin, but
take.
I'm not a good spinner. I just can make yarn. Not particularly good yarn. Someday I'm going to abandon knitting and just spin, you know, when I'm 85.
I find that
Oh,
they're good complements for each other,
I
but for
know.
me
It's
though.
just that knitting has got me 100% engaged right now, and I don't there still are only 24 hours in a day.
Wait a minute. I thought besides teaching and knitting, you also write.
I do. I wrote a novel, but that was published about 4 or 5 years ago now. And it's the middle one of a trilogy, which is actually in a Mobius sequence. So the middle doesn't really mean middle, it simply means in the flow of it. And when I finish this next knitting book, I'm hopefully going to take 1 year off to finish the rest of the novel trilogy and knit recreationally during that time without writing anything down about what I'm knitting. We'll see if I'm capable of that or not.
I think it really says something when knitting recreationally is a treat.
Oh, you know what I want to be when I grow up? A knitter. A knitter who just says, I think I will knit that sweater, and knits it without thinking about what it means in the bigger world.
It's a lot of responsibility changing people's perceptions of how things are done, I think. And I think that was my favorite thing about coming today because I bought the New Pathways book as soon as it came out last year. I went to the book signing last year at Pearlescence and it sat on my bookshelf because I hadn't
Time.
had time or the
Not
mind space.
entirely. I poked into
Yeah,
it.
Mom took a look through it, but
Good.
I found my receipt tucked in the front very firmly. Like I just left the store with it,
Yeah, I
so.
left it for a bookmark when I was working on the book, and I want to work through the book.
Again.
And you're making me sound so anal.
Oh no, you're thorough.
Yes. Is
You're
that what
thorough
it is?
and
Meticulous.
comprehensive.
Okay.
And you digest something. It's wonderful.
So yeah, so I've been nibbling at it.
I think I'm a product of my environment. Too much stimulus, too many choices. Take a little bit of this, like a buffet with
Yeah.
my knitting. You're much more old school about things. Start at the beginning, finish at the end. So, which is it's one way of doing things. It's just different. And
Everyone has to do what is their nature, or they're not very happy.
yeah,
this is a new development, though.
Ah,
So,
how
I think it's the way knitting
interesting.
books are going because it's not one sock with.
Right,
Yeah.
right. Yeah, my books are very much college courses. Kind of, not really, but they give you this last book, New Pathways in particular. There's so much in there. It could last people for a couple years
And there's still buzz
easily.
about it, even though it came out a year ago, which
Oh
is
yeah.
really
Oh yeah.
cool. Because given the spike in publishing with knitting, I mean, it's such a great thing that we've got so much material. Before we started recording, we actually were discussing, books and what was available and what's available now. And 10 years ago, there were maybe, I don't know, 20 or 30 knitting books
I
published a year. It
know.
was a
I
lot lower
know.
than it is
And how
now.
many
many sock
fewer?
books were there out?
There were very, very few. Very few. The first significant sock books really were Spinoff did one.
That's right.
Yes.
About 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago.
We have the original one.
Yeah, I do too.
15 years ago.
15 years.
Yeah. That's when we started.
And then Nancy Bush, Ethnic Socks.
Folk Socks, yeah.
Folk Socks. And then Priscilla Gibson Roberts and Anna Zilborg. Yep. Those three published in the late 90s. And those were, if those hadn't been published and brought socks to the, you know, dignified, enormous value that they are, this wouldn't be happening now. With sock knitting is the biggest thing, it just keeps getting bigger. And you want to know why I think it does. I think that sock knitting is like the sports car driving of knitting. If you have a sports car, you like driving around curvy mountain roads. You're not going to buy a sports car if you live in Iowa and you're just going to go straight forever. That's flat knitting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, sock knitting is getting a great little sports car and taking it around all the curves of the foot.
Well,
and so it's really a thrill. It's a thrill ride.
And to keep with that, the sports car analogy, you have the same kind of luxury options with sock yarns. Because you need so much less as far as quantity.
Exactly.
Concerned.
So you can afford to get something you love.
Like, have you knit with the Casbah yet?
I have. It's wonderful stuff.
Isn't it fabulous?
So many of the fleece artists and handmaiden yarns are extraordinary.
Yeah, I'm on a Casbah kick
right good.
Now. So.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It's just a little plumper than some sock yarns. You get a body to your sock that is exquisite.
It is.
It's perfect. It's great yarn.
I just love that you can get, you know, 100 grams or 120 grams of just beautifully hand-painted yarn. And no matter where you work, you can wear fun socks.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Well, you can. Yeah.
Actually, I work in an environment where I'm supposed to be East Coast office.
Oh.
So she wears stockings with shoes.
Oh, my.
I don't. I work barefoot.
You should quit.
We're working on it.
Jackets. Starch blouse, pearls if I feel like it, closed-toe shoes, hose. And my only rebellion to this is I wear hand-knit socks.
Good.
It's a very air-conditioned place. I get cold.
Yeah.
And then sometimes the kids see me walk by and there are flashes of wildly colored socks.
Wait, you're teaching and you have to dress that way? Is it a private school?
It's a tutoring situation.
Oh.
But it's very
It's cheesy. Important that the kids get to see those flashes of color and originality.
Well, it's so important. I actually, our mom's first foray into sock knitting was when I was in 6th or 7th grade, and I was very clumsy, which hasn't changed. And I was breaking toes all the time. I've actually broken all of my toes.
Thing.
Oh, whatever. They're small bones. Except for my big toes, I've broken the rest of them. And, I mean, this was just bumping into things and tripping over things.
You need steel-toed shoes.
If I had known what I know now, yeah. But you can't do anything for broken toes. You tape them to the toe next to it, and you walk in comfortable shoes. So I ended up with Birkenstocks and clogs, and Mom knit me insane socks, just like
Wonderful. Fun,
festive, bright-colored socks. And this was before, like, hand-painted sock yarns were really popular. Because this would have been in like 1991 or 92.
Yeah, they weren't around much.
I was working stitches.
Yeah.
And I came across Myra's beautifully hand-painted yarns. There was a sock that looked like a rainbow.
And Myra is Fancy Image Yarns. She's up in Shelton, Washington.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I absolutely fell in love with the sock. And I said, Jasmine needs to have these. And I started talking to her, and it just grew from there. And I said, well, actually, I had knit socks as a child in Germany.
But?
And that was that. I knitted one pair of socks, and that was that. No, actually not, but
it didn't stick the way it has. So, and then a few years later, the pre-printed yarns came out, which were so exciting. And then people got bored because pre-printed wasn't exciting enough.
I know, exactly. And now look where we are.
And what I like about the new sock patterns is I can dig in my stash of self-striping yarn, which I'm kind of bored with at this stage, but I have 5 years' worth
Most of us do.
Sock yarn. I knit a sock a week, which I'm not going to, and it's just sitting there looking sad and accusing. So with new sock techniques, I can use my pre-printed yarn and enjoy it and have it do something new.
Yes, yes.
So that's another reason.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting because I just, it's creative things that make use of things you have. Tika and I, who's in the class with us, we're doing a social pressure experiment, which we're not buying new yarn.
Mm-hmm.
If we get new yarn, we have to get rid of a similar amount. Don't laugh. It's a great
How
idea.
How is that going for you, dear?
It's going very well, actually. But it's to reevaluate why and how much we buy, because there's a huge consumer influence.
I know.
And it's just terrible because there's all this stuff and you're always being pummeled with, oh, this Etsy dyer and that Etsy dyer and this person. And it's all beautiful. But there's so much of it. And so we decided that if we got new stuff in, an equivalent amount had to leave.
And so you keep the same amount, except that as you keep knitting, you get to replace what you knit?
No.
No. Ooh.
For what you finish, you get a bottle of wine for the
other one. At what point do you begin to let yourself get more yarn? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's our end.
Well, you might make the Sock Summit an access point as well, because...
Isn't that in 2009?
2009.
Oh, we're good.
But Stitches is 2009 as well.
It's February before.
Oh, right. But you might. But if you need it to do it again, because there will be more sock yarn from indie dyers there than any.
Oh yeah.
It will be.
Well, we made allowances for events.
Tempting.
Yeah,
good.
Of course, because you can't be that good.
Yeah.
Nobody is that good.
Yeah.
So, but we're enjoying it and it's working.
But it's
well.
Wonderful to look and see what to do with what you have.
That's actually why I started
Absolutely.
Spinning because I saw on. Well, I was reading. The Yarn House blog, and I was reading Franklin's blog, and I was reading January 1, and she was knitting with some of the hand-spun yarn from Crown Mountain Farms, which is beautiful, and I've been spinning since I was 10 years old.
Wonderful.
Yeah, Mom and I took a class together. It was awesome.
Aww.
And this is kind of theme, it seems. So we took this class, and my wheel sat while I was in college because... It was not practical, and there were a number of things, but I was looking on there, and I was like, oh, I'll just buy it, and I clicked over to buy, and they had none of the pre-spun yarn. And I looked over, and I said, oh, but they have roving. I have a spinning wheel. I can spin yarn.
Ah.
Yeah. So it's a slippery slope, and I love hand-spun sock yarn.
That's the ultimate. That is the ultimate.
That's
the ultimate.
Yeah. So that's
And then
I've
you can
doing.
Spin it just the way you want it.
Exactly. Because I'm a big fan because I've taken Judith's classes of 3-ply yarns for socks.
Mm-hmm.
I love a nice round sock yarn. I love it cushy, and I have a weakness for super.
And you know how to make it just the way you want it.
I've been practicing.
Ah, that's wonderful. I hope someday I learn that.
It's taken a lot of practice.
I'll
when
bet.
I was working a really stressful job, I was spinning at night so that I could sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It was like, okay, sit and spin for a couple hours, and then you could sleep through the night. So it made a big difference, But yeah, so that's where I fell in. But that's what we're doing, and we're trying to reevaluate how much we have and to use what we've got. And it feels nice to be able to say, I finished this, and now let's go and shop in
Absolutely.
Stash.
So, Absolutely.
And I've been playing with dyeing stuff that I've already got. So because roving tends to pile up the same way yarn piles up, it seems. Especially in our house where, I have a room where I get to work, so...
Ah, good.
I have my own space with shelves and
Yeah, I have
light.
A yarn room that looks a lot like a yarn shop.
It does.
Well, it looks really good.
That's the most important thing, I think, for a lot of people is that they need to display it. So let's talk about your yarn room.
Well, when my daughter grew up and moved out, I didn't the first day, but I slowly took it back over and turned it into a yarn room. And when you write knitting books and teach and are as well known as I am, you slowly begin to have yarn companies sending you boxes of yarn, unbidden.
Yeah.
And it, at first, the first one that comes, you think, oh my God, free yarn. you got so excited, you can hardly believe it could be happening to you. But at this point, I try to ask companies not to send me anything till I let them know what I might need for a book. Because I don't want them just sending me yarn that I won't actually use.
Yeah.
But I have lots and lots and lots of yarn. And what I actually like to do is I have some favorite yarn companies for sock yarn. Blue Moon, I think their actual yarn is the best. It's the spinning is so perfect for a commercial yarn. I love the Fleece Artist and Handmade, like the Cosba.
Mm-hmm.
I love Luette's Gems Merino and Sport Weight. I
Yes.
love that yarn. I think every yarn store in the company should keep that yarn because the colors are great. They all work together, so on and so forth. They're great for baby clothes, for socks, everything. But basically, what I like to do is let companies that have my favorite yarns, I let them send me a lot so that when I design a sock and I go in my yarn room and think, what should this look like? I have a lot to choose from. Because if I go in there thinking it's got to be this certain quality green and I can't find it, I actually stand in my yarn room where I have, you know, God knows how much yarn, and I say to myself, I don't have enough yarn. And then I think, how could that be? I'm surrounded by yarn.
Those are my favorite moments when you look at it and you go, I have nothing. It's when you say, I have nothing to wear.
There's nothing. Yeah, it's the equivalent. It's very funny.
Especially when you're trying to explain it to somebody else.
To a muggle?
Yes.
Not even a muggle, just my husband knits, and
fine husband.
He's a good guy. But he'll come in, he'll look at, you know, floor to ceiling yarn in my closet in my office is yarn.
Do you share?
No. Andrew has his own yarn.
Oh, what a good marriage.
I share my needles and my tools. Mm-hmm. But we don't mingle yarn. It's better for everyone that way, I think.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it works nicely. We work well together. But he'll look around because I'll say, I'm trying to knit this shawl, but nothing I have is right. Mm-hmm. And that's where spinning kind of helps because I can make what I want usually. But if it's something that I need to start right this second because I'm so inspired and the muse has just struck
you
me like
a... You might
have
to shop.
Exactly. So... He'll look around and say, no, there's no yarn here. Clearly, there's
I
no
know,
issue.
I know.
It's good. It's good. So we just finished up class, and let's talk about how it went.
Well, I had a great time, but then I always have a great time teaching. But what I really appreciate is when people absorb the material I'm giving them and it sinks in and they look up at me with a sense of relief and happiness. I get it.
The aha moment.
Yeah, yeah. And everyone seemed to agree that they did get it.
Yeah. Well, you could see kind of around the room as it was, as their light bulbs were lighting up. So
yes.
I thought that was pretty fabulous.
It was.
So when we stopped recording earlier, there was a short pause that you guys might not even notice. Kat and Mom and I wandered over to the Yarn Boutique, which is the shop that's hosting Kat to teach the class today as well as the Mobius class tomorrow. And it's a lovely, warm, cozy space.
With great yarn choices.
Yeah.
Lots
really
of
nice yarn choices. And clearly very enthusiastic customers.
Yes.
And Marianne's husband, Bob, is a knitter.
Which I think is so fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, fantastic. And he was in there finishing up a sweater, and apparently he's a good teacher of continental knitting.
Yeah. I'm so enthusiastic when spouses in the shop are also knowledgeable. I find nothing more frustrating than a spouse working the shop who knows nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
It's also a sign of a good marriage.
It is.
Totally.
Yeah. It's good to understand each other and have common threads.
Yeah. Yes.
They carry loads of interesting stuff. We wandered through. Mom picked up some shiny, sparkly yarn that was dyed by
Kramer.
Kelly.
I think, wasn't it Kramer?
It had the
red
silver thread spun with
it. Yeah, from Kramer in Pennsylvania.
Yes. And I think someone local did the dyeing.
Oh.
So.
Oh.
Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Because I know they sell that base yarn. Wonderful.
That'd be fun. I just love how blingy it is.
I know, blingy, yet you can't feel the bling, so you can wear it in a sock.
Exactly. That was fun. Tika and I both tripped and dropped our credit cards a little bit. I bought some County. Mom bought some sparkly stuff.
You bought a lot of County.
Not that much.
But it was fine choices.
Yeah, I enabled it a little.
Yeah, Mom helped me, so.
Good.
It was a very good, nice break to the day, and as the thing I really enjoyed about class is that as the day went on, things got simpler. So when you're fresh in the morning, the structure was really good.
Good, yeah.
So, yeah.
And so in the end, I told you a bit about the next book. And notice it took 2 to 3 minutes to convey how the whole thing worked. And there was not a single person who didn't get it.
Exactly.
And you're all brain dead.
Yep.
My test of the material in the next book is, can I teach it to brain dead people in 3 minutes? And so far the answer has been yes.
the light bulbs went on across the classroom.
I know. Of course, you had learned a few things that fed into that already about the footprint and the basic little toenail, but still, that was simple stuff, wasn't it?
Which is fantastic. I'm so excited about that because we had Colleen, who doesn't get a chance to do a whole lot of knitting, and she can do a foot and leave it in a basket.
I know.
And come back to it later.
I know.
So
that's right. A footprint.
A footprint, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's really good for people who have less time to knit.
Absolutely. I mean, they could make a whole bunch of footprints, and they're just so, they're so whole. They're so satisfying.
Yeah. So your favorite thing about today?
Being with everybody. I love knitters. Knitters are so bright-eyed and bright-hearted.
Open to new learning.
Very much. Very much. And a lot of adults don't learn many new things very often, I think. Knitters really do. It's incredibly healthy to be a knitter.
Well, Stephanie's last book dealt with keeping your brain in shape and why knitting is good for you.
Yeah.
It just feeds into that whole, if you keep learning and you keep challenging yourself, you'll hold off Alzheimer's for just a little bit longer. And I just think that's so great. And we had a pretty mixed group today as far as the age ranges. That's so interesting because you wouldn't normally see such a diverse group of people doing anything else.
Anything else wouldn't bring this group together. Yep. But knitting does. And we never question it. You never look at the person next to you and say, why am I sitting next to them? You're looking at their knitting and going, wow, look at that. And so it's the most unifying hobby in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And we're going to dominate the world. And it's not competitive. No, no. So for some people it seems to be, but mostly absolutely not. It's so communal.
Yeah.
We should dominate the world because then the world would be a kinder place.
Would be.
So our plan to take over the world is a good one.
It is.
We can assume that no one who isn't part of the plan is listening, so we can talk about it.
Of course. The most effective revolutions happen under the radar.
That's right.
Yeah. Now that we've conspired to have a knitting revolution, if you will, with Kat, I think now would be a good time to include our little public service announcement. We officially would like to encourage you folks to
register to vote.
Yes, if you're a United States listener, this is going to be a killer election. If you fit all the criteria to vote, go out and get registered, and then on voting day or election day, go out and change the world.
Yes, knitters can change the world a stitch at a time.
We can. One
stitch
at a time.
For the better.
Well, if you look at all the work that Stephanie's done raising money for Knitters Without Borders,
yes,
it really does speak to what a change a bunch of motivated people can make.
Well, and we are forced to be reckoned with. We are just the silent majority.
We're not silent. There's nothing silent about us. We're the stealth majority because more people knit than golf. So
yes, but we are too silent, too stealthy.
We'll speak out. I don't see how we can be missed now.
We need to step up and be counted.
There we go. So step up, be counted, and vote. And as further incentive to participate and be heard, Kat was kind enough to give us a couple of copies of her books. We have A Treasury of Magical Knitting, which is her first Mobius book, and a copy of New Pathways for Sock Knitters, Book 1, which is the one we took the class for.
Yes.
And these are actually kind of pricey books. So, in order to get in the running, because remember, you have to be in it to win it, Kat is looking for knitting jokes. They can be body, they can be clean, so long as they're knitting jokes. What I'll do is put a list together, and we'll take a look through, and we'll send it to Kat, and we'll pick a couple of winners. If you could email us with your preference as to which book along with your joke at our email address, which is knitmoregirls@yahoo.com. That way we'll be able to do this. And let's put a cutoff of, how about October 31st?
That's a month.
Yep. It gives you about a month to get in. And if you get a real zinger, then You'll get it. And Kat signed these, so they're extra special.
Also, I think if they're good jokes, people should be able to enter more than once.
We might think of other prizes for, like, honorable mentions. If we see something that was really good but didn't win, we might find a little something to send you. So get in it and send us your jokes. We'd love to hear them. And get out and get registered to vote. We're not a political podcast, so we're not going to tell you which way we think you should vote. But just to do your civic duty and be heard.
It is so important, and it's such a privilege to be allowed to vote.
It is. So, get out there. This week we'd like to thank the Yarn Boutique for hosting the class and offering us ample space to record and picking up lunch while we did record. We'd also like to say a huge thank you to Kat Bordy for participating in our little chat and also for her offering of books for our contest.
And generally being awesome.
As always, our show notes can be found at knitmoregirls.blogspot.com. That's knitmoregirls.blogspot.com. We can also be reached by email at knitmoregirls@yahoo.com. Remember, if you're participating in the contest for the Kat Bordy books, send your contest entries there.
I'm Kat.
And Jasmine.
And Gigi.
Telling you to knit more.